Great. Thank you, Omega Vamsa. Last night in the puja, Jnanavacha said three words, complete and perfect enlightenment. When he said those, on one hand, my heart sang. Yeah? I loved those words. But I also thought, what, me? What, us lot?
Yeah.
We're messy. When I look at the order, when I look at us lot, I see a bunch of monkeys. Yeah? When I look at myself, in my inner life, I see an animal, yeah? Genetically, biologically, I think socially, we're a bunch of monkeys. Yeah? Prometheus, he stole fire from the gods and he gave it to man. Yeah? We're a bunch of monkeys and we've been given the key to paradise. And if you've got the key, the most important thing you need is the door. So thank you to Nagabodhi for his talk yesterday about the door. So when I think of Adishtana, this word Adishtana, and when I hear people talk about it, it often seems quite magical. There's a magic evoked with the term Adishtana. And I don't believe in magic. I think of myself as a rationalist. Saying that, I do see ghosts, and I do have visions of Dakinis and Buddhas, but I'm a rationalist. Yeah? And for me, conditionality is the thing. Yeah, I believe Paticca-samuppada. Simple as that. Yeah? Paticca-samuppada, if you take hydrogen and oxygen, you get a cloud of gas. Yeah, it's basically an invisible, squashy cloud. Yeah? If it's in gravity, it will try to separate into two clouds, but there it is, an invisible, squashy cloud. If a spark happens in that cloud, it explodes. Yeah? It explodes into a ball of fire. Yeah? The heat is quite something, and the light, it seems, will travel through the universe for billions of years. That's remarkable. Yeah? This explosion also produces something which you could call ash, which is water. Yeah? So that's Paticca-samuppada. You couldn't predict that. You couldn't predict that to happen, yeah, from this invisible, squashy cloud. Yeah? Another example of Paticca-samuppada is the caterpillar. Yeah? Caterpillar, little green, squashy thing, eating cabbages, and goes along. One day, it's eaten enough cabbage, and it gets a thread of silk, and it spins it around itself. Yeah? Try doing that without arms. It does that. And then inside the cocoon, it makes this cocoon around itself. And inside this cocoon, it doesn't grow wings. It doesn't grow legs. What happens? It turns into fluid. It turns into a mush. Yeah? And then the mush reforms into a butterfly. Yeah? And the butterfly, it's got those long spindly legs. It's got a really furry body. It's actually more furry than a mouse, a butterfly. And it's got those wings, yeah? Big, beautiful, colourful wings. And I think the most remarkable thing about the butterfly is that the wings are dusty. So this mush turns into this incredible thing. Spiritual unfoldment, Paticca-samuppada, yeah? If you simplify your life, something amazing happens. And by simplify your life, what I mean by that, ethics and meditation, that's simplifying the life. Yeah? So Paticca-samuppada is often held up to be the sort of core doctrine of Buddhism. And I'm confused by that because everybody believes in Paticca-samuppada. A dog knows, and depends upon getting that bone, it'll be happy. Yeah? A Christian knows, in dependence upon loving Jesus, I'll go to heaven. So what's the difference for us? Yeah. What I think, we're there, the difference for us is that the Buddha says we apply Paticca-samuppada to absolutely everything, yeah, especially to our mental states. And also, we continue to question what result arises from what action. So here we are. We've got our bodies, animal-like, monkey-like bodies. We've got our senses. We've got our experience. Every instant of our experience, it's unquestionably what it is, isn't it? Yeah? your experience now, it's exactly what it is. Yeah? It's also the mysterious conditions for an unknown future. Yeah? So every moment of experience, it's both butterfly making its maiden voyage, it's also the mush inside the cocoon. You don't know what's going to happen next. Yeah. So this question, Adhisthana, to me, what that boils down to is the question, what gives rise to Buddhahood? So I'm going to mention a couple of things from the Pali Canon, things that certainly the first one we're very familiar with, the positive Nidanas. In dependence upon dukkha arises faith. In dependence upon joy and bliss arises concentration. In dependence upon concentration arises clarity, yatabhuta jnana dasana, knowledge and vision of things as they really are. So is this true? Yeah? Is this your experience? Is this my experience? In dependence upon dukkha, quite often arises resentment, depression. Yeah? In dependence upon pleasure and bliss arises attachment, craving. In dependence upon concentration arises a stubborn belief in my own rightness. Yeah? So what do we do with that? Yeah? We've got a choice. The positive links of conditionality, they unfold naturally, but we have to be conscious. Yeah? We have to make choices. We have to steer that process. We have to subtly, more and more subtly, ask that question, genuinely, what does give rise to what? Yeah. So the other instance from the Pali Canon, one of my favourite suttas, the Anthill Sutta from the Majjhima Nikaya. This, I think, is a discourse on Buddha nature. Remember, we used to talk about Buddha nature a few years ago. Here it is in the Pali Canon, in the Majjhima Nikaya, and it's a form of Buddha nature which I think is very harmonious with Sangharakshita's teachings on Buddha nature. Basically, what is an anthill? An anthill, if you look in a forest, you see an anthill. It's a pile of bits of twig and bits of leaf in the forest. Whatever it is, it's an anthill. Yeah? The Buddha's saying, your body is an anthill. Yeah? If you go up to an anthill, you can run your fingers through it, or you can run it through your fingers. Yeah? There's nothing in an anthill other than bits of twig and leaf. The forest is bits of twig and leaf. Likewise, the Buddha says, your body is made up out of boiled rice and porridge. Yeah? So we take the anthill, a symbol for the body, yeah, and we dig into it with wisdom, yeah, with energy and with wisdom. So body awareness, that seems to be the main teaching of this sutta, is body awareness. We dig with wisdom and we uncover stuff, yeah, as you do, a bar, a fork in the road, a toad, all sorts of stuff that you uncover, and you chuck them out and keep digging. Yeah? So you're noticing things and you're discriminating what they are, making choices, chucking them out. Yeah? Deep in your experience, if you delve deeper and deeper into your own experience, you discover the Naga serpent. And this is the Buddha, yeah? Right in the bottom of your physical experience. And the Buddha says, giving you the advice on this sutta, leave the Naga serpent, do not harm the Naga serpent, honour the Naga serpent. Yeah? You could say, you've been practicing for many years, you've been purifying, you've been throwing away hindrances, you discover the Buddha in your experience, do you really need someone to tell you, don't harm it? Do you really need someone to say you need to honour it? I think we do, yeah. You see it again and again. We need to learn to recognise our own spiritual qualities. Yeah? We need to learn to recognise, to honour, to protect our own spiritual qualities and each other's spiritual qualities. It's easy to be cynical. Yeah? I think particularly for blokes, it's easy to be cynical when love is genuine, when love arises, when open-handedness, when clarity is there. It's easy to be cynical in ourselves and in others. So enlightenment, complete and perfect enlightenment. Yeah. There are a lot of metaphors or myths, energy and compassion, yeah, the abundance of energy, bliss. One of my favourites these days, putting down the heavy load. Yeah. That is such a beautiful metaphor to describe enlightenment. They're myths to do with consciousness, volition, vedana, Rupa, you know, the body becomes light, the body becomes made of light. Samnya would be, well, knowledge and vision, seeing the world as it truly is. Yeah? So the difference between the enlightened and the non-enlightened, and I don't say between the enlightened and us, because I think when we say that, we're undermining our own confidence and we're undermining our faith in Sangharakshita as a genuine teacher of the Dharma. Yeah. It has been said that the mark of a great Dharma teacher is that disciples, well, they make progress. They make spiritual progress. They make substantial attainments. Even they surpass the teacher. Yeah. I think we need to be open to that possibility. So the difference between the enlightened and the non-enlightened is how we respond to feeling and craving, the choices we make. So feeling arises, and in dependence upon that arises craving. Yeah? So this is not A gives rise to B. It's more like a dog chasing its tail. Yeah? Feeling and craving, they sort of spiral round each other, don't they? Round and round. Yeah? So in the midst of craving, we can stay aware of our feeling and we can keep questioning its ability to influence us. Shantideva says in the Bodhicaryavatara that the influence of phenomena is removed by employing the influence of emptiness, which I would say is Adhisthana, the influence of emptiness. So by seeing the conditional nature of phenomena, their influence is removed. So for me, the Dharma's a complicated mass of teachings, and in order to reflect on it, we need to have a simple version of it that we can just have in our minds very simply for the purposes of practice. Here's mine, current one. We don't see clearly because we're blinded by passion. We take our emotions seriously because we don't see them as they are. So that's a vicious circle. Two ways to break that circle. One, loosen the passion, loosen the influence of feelings and emotions, and two, boff, see clearly. Yeah. So we don't see clearly because we're blinded by passion. Passion blinds us and influences our decisions because we don't see it as simply arising in dependence upon conditions. So to break this cycle, how do we break the influence of feelings and emotions? How do we break the influence of our passions? Well, we practice. Deliberately bring to mind passions and work on them. You trigger passions of craving, boredom and aversion by stimulating the pleasures, the neutrality and the pain of Vedana. The best way of doing that is people. You bring to mind a friend, a neutral person and an enemy, and you train yourself to learn, you learn to not let that complex of feelings and emotions that arise to cloud how you see and how you respond to the world. Developing a kind, non-self-centered attitude to oneself is another rich area, I think, of reflection in that metta-bhavana. Obviously, many other methods outside meditation, the whole teachings on reactive creative, the whole teachings on do what needs to be done. Yeah, beautiful. The Aniruddhas, yeah, a beautiful description. Developing passion for others rather than passion for yourself. So that's breaking the cycle on the passion end of the spectrum. The other end, learn to see clearly. How do you learn to see clearly? You have to learn to look. So mindfulness of breathing is a pretty obvious example for this. I must say, though, that I learnt the mindfulness of breathing and I found the breath pretty boring. I think I can honestly say that for the first 10 or 15 years of doing the mindfulness of breathing, I can count on one hand the number of times I counted as far as two. But fortunately, in 15 years, yeah, fortunately, in a book by Sangharakshita, I think before I was a Mitra, I came across the encouragement to reflect on the five skandhas. So I did that. To investigate and pay attention to my experience, to pay attention what gives rise to what in my experience. If you really want to understand something, explain it. Yeah? Explain the relationship between dukkha and freedom. How do they work? Yeah? Again, for me, that's another dog chasing its tail, or maybe that's more like a cloud of intermingling gases. Yeah? dukkha and freedom, they can somehow become each other. Yeah, they're so separate. Yeah? Explain, how is it to be spontaneous? How is it that when we're more spontaneous, we're more ethical? Yeah? How is it that as we practice, we become more unique, more individual, and yet more in harmony with each other? How is that? Yeah? I think to communicate the principle and the practice of the path has for me been one of my greatest benefits for developing clarity. But also to communicate experience, to communicate my experience. And I think that's, if we're talking unity in the order, I think that's what we need. We need to communicate our experience, our spiritual experience, with a wide variety of order members, especially, perhaps, those who you find it hard to understand. Yeah? Especially communicate with order members who you find it hard to be understood by. So when Suryavamsa asked me to give this talk, it was because I'd written something in Shabda about mudita. So I thought I'd better mention something about mudita. Mudita is happiness in the happiness of others. Yeah? So the Buddha is not interested in our sense pleasures. He's not interested in whether we get enough cheesecake. Yeah? What he cares about is, well, basically our self-harming. Yeah? We cause ourselves to suffer unnecessarily. That's what the Buddha's interested in. And mudita is a delight when we stop doing that. It's a delight in our inspiration, a delight and an encouragement of our unfolding spiritual qualities. I think this has to be a careful celebration, yeah? A careful celebration of each other's progress. But we do have to be open to the possibility that some of us are making substantial progress. There was talk yesterday about how we relate to Bhante and that being a unifying factor, and I think that's very true, but I think how we relate to each other is just as important, if not more important. Sangharakshita, I see, is a wonderful, beautiful springboard for the spiritual life, for the unfoldment of the order. Yeah? We leap from that springboard together. If we're going to stay unified, we need to communicate with each other very, very deeply. Yeah. I only exist as I am in relation to you. Yeah. We only exist in relation to each other. Yeah. If a friend talks about a spiritual experience, don't dismiss it. Yeah. That's undermining the unity of the order. Don't collude with them. Yeah. Don't take it on blindly. Again, that's undermining the unity of the order. Don't ignore them. Where can you talk of unity if we're ignoring each other when we talk about the most important aspect of what Buddhism is all about? So that's me putting the problem of the spiritual life in a very simple way, in a very simple nutshell. And I'm sure we've all had that experience, that you're sitting in meditation, you're aware of the way things are, you're aware with clarity of your experience, and then you get distracted. Yeah? I'm sure you've all had that experience. I certainly have. That's our seeing clearly being overwhelmed by passion. Yeah? Your interest is stronger than your intention, you could say. Yeah? And when that doesn't happen, when feeling and craving arise in your experience and we don't lose self-reflective awareness, well, that is amazing. Yeah, that is the butterfly emerging from the caterpillar, or the butterfly emerging from the monkey, maybe even. Dramatic, unexpected, totally unexpected things happen. Yeah, I think that not losing self-reflective awareness when cravings arise is the linchpin and the trigger of the spiritual life. Sangharakshita said, I think it's in living with awareness, that if you can't tell the difference between feeling and emotion, you can't practice the Buddhist path. So if we see clearly, then passion becomes love, and without selfishness, our seeing becomes pure and clear. So seeing clearly and acting with a heart full of love is Adishtana manifesting. So that's what I want to say. Just to conclude, Adhisthana is what happens when we tread the path. It's how we respond to our experiences, and it's how we make choices. Yeah. Our passion and our delusion transform into love and clarity, or love and freedom. And unity in the order is not only a great vehicle for that progress, but or rather the communication in the order is not only a great vehicle for that progress, it's also the vehicle for the unity of the order. Communication is the vehicle for unity in the order. The effort to understand and the effort to be understood. Yeah. Notice with both of those, the responsibility is on you. Yeah, to understand and to be understood. Yeah. So I think with all this, we have to be very careful not to sell ourselves short. If we have naive myths of the goal, of where we're heading, then we will give up. Yeah. If we have no myths of the goal, then we will give up. Yeah. We need realistic, appropriate myths of the goal. And the myths that we have in our 20s and 30s will be different than the myths we have in our 50s and 60s. And that's great, yeah? That's evolution. I think for me, just one other point on that, the jewel in the crown of trying to communicate the Dharma to others is trying to explain the Dharma with myths that are not your own myths, yeah? You particularly notice this, you know, I'm officially old now, halfway to 90. Trying to communicate the Dharma to people in their 20s is really difficult. Yeah. It's really difficult. It's the hardest thing that I've discovered. Yeah. It just seems like a different world. So we are amazing. I think we're amazing as an order. I think the project that we've got of Adhisthana, the project that we've got of manifesting spiritual qualities and making them flow into the future is amazing. And I just want to finish with a short quote from the Majjhima Nikaya. Two disciples of the Buddha, they're discussing the Dharma together, and they enjoy the discussion, and this is what they say of it. Just as a young woman or man, youthful, fond of ornaments, with head bathed, would joyfully take a garland of flowers with both hands and place it on their heads. So too, take this Dharma, drink it in, eat it, as it were, by word and by thought. Good indeed it is that he makes his fellows in the holy life emerge from the unwholesome and establish themselves in the wholesome. This is what these two great beings, Mahanagas, thus it was that these two great beings rejoiced in each other's good words. Thank you.